Welcome to Radioactive Magazine. Jesse Sheely and Jordan Hamrick talk with Radioactive regular Spencer Graves, me, about their lives and work with Jerusalem Farm. They strive to transform their lives and the lives of their neighbors through service retreat experiences, sustainable living, and home repair. This includes an active program that helps their neighbors maintain their homes in the historic northeast neighborhoods of Kansas City, Paseo to I-435 and Cliff Drive to Truman Road. Am I correct that this is south of the cliffs overlooking the Missouri River, the Truman Road, which is a main drag through downtown Kansas City, Missouri, and Paseo is roughly the east edge of downtown Kansas City, Missouri?
Yes, that is correct.
Great. So tell us more about Jerusalem Farm.
My name's Jesse, and I am the director at Jerusalem Farm. And I always like to say, first and foremost, we are a full-time community of volunteers. So there's currently 18 of us that live at the farm. That includes 5 children. And we share our lives together, work, pray, and play together. And we, like you said, we do home repair for people living in the northeast neighborhoods of Kansas City. And we also host retreats for high school and college students. And then we also encourage sustainable living throughout the city and within our community.
We are called Jerusalem Farm. And some people get a little deceived when they pull up and they see we're right in the urban neighborhood here in Kansas City. And so the farm aspect is a little bit more of a meditation of being connected with the soil and growing in many different ways. So we do grow food, not quite on a farm scale, but we have large urban growing spaces both on our property, and we help maintain a community garden as well as a community orchard. And so I just like to clarify that for people that are listening, that we're called Jerusalem Farm. And it is definitely a meditation within our practices, but we don't grow enough produce to sell or anything. And easily with 18 people in community, we have plenty of mouths to feed inside ourselves. So I like to specify that for community as well.
Yeah, thank you. So there are lots of trees around Kansas City. Are you planting fruit trees?
We have just one orchard that we planted with another local organization called Giving Grove. They help people plant fruit trees around the city. They're another great program. And so we have an orchard that we've planted with them, as well as on our own property. We have a few fruit trees, which the peaches are coming in every day now. So they are wonderful and juicy and great for the harvest.
There are groups like this Giving Grove and other groups that organize gleaners, if you will. People will, you have a fruit tree planted in your front yard or whatever, and you can call when the fruit is ripe and someone else will come and harvest it.
Yeah, that's right. There's lots of organizations like that.
Mm-hmm. Great. So what, if any, is the relationship between Jerusalem Farm and the Catholic worker movement?
So we are quite similar in some ways to the Catholic worker movement. Many Catholic workers are also intentional communities. We serve the poor and vulnerable. And we certainly take a lot of Dorothy Day's teachings to heart, and who was the founder of the Catholic worker movement. But we are different in a few ways. One, we don't recognize ourselves as a Catholic worker only because our services are mostly to those who own homes. And generally, Catholic workers are geared toward people experiencing homelessness.
Great. The term intentional community, define that for me.
I would say it's a group of people seeking to live out their lives intentionally together. And that intentionality shows up for us in our community in various ways that we go about living our daily lives. So we intentionally gather in the morning before our work days, where we meet for community prayer, which we rotate through, and people lead that in all different formats, whatever way they feel called. We have intentional meals together about 4 to 5 nights a week. That's a great space where we gather, as well as just living in space together. Our homes, we have 2 main homes that we live together in. And that's where you really are learning to navigate relationships on a different level, because we're not just living together, we're also working together. So imagine, if you're listening to the program, that you end your work day and you go home and there's everybody you worked with all day. It creates quite the dynamic sometimes. Definitely a process of practicing daily acts of forgiveness, love, and compassion, which is what I believe a great way to approach our daily lives. If we can work on those practices of forgiveness, love, and compassion on a small micro scale in our homes daily, we like to think of how that scales upwards to our local community and even our global community. When we can recognize that every action we take affects something immediately around you because we live so close with one another, it's much easier for us to scale that up and think about how do our actions go on to affect our greater global family and our greater communities around us.
Great. Tell us more. Talk to us about your home repair work.
So, like I said, we provide home repair services to low-income individuals and families, as well as seniors living in the Northeast neighborhoods of Kansas City. And our program works that people reach out to us and we come and see what kind of work they need done on their home. And we work with volunteers from around the country and around the city that come and help us on work sites. And then when our project is completed, we just ask that the homeowner pay us back for the materials that we used on their home. So labor is free since we're all volunteers, but homeowners can pay us back at a monthly rate that fits in their budget for the repairs that we completed. And then that money goes back into helping someone else. So it sort of becomes a revolving no interest loan fund for people to work on their homes.
Great. How does, and so compare this with other groups like Habitat for Humanity.
Our model is fairly different from Habitat in that we don't build new homes. Habitat also does repairs as well. I think the main difference is really that we live in the community that we serve. We also work a lot with code violations in the city and trying to keep people out of the code violation system and the housing court system in Kansas City, and also trying to change the system and how the system works. Seeking for a more restorative justice approach to how people keep their home up to code.
Can you give me a specific example?
I think a great story to tell about that is actually how we got into working with code violations. And that was quite a few years ago now. We had a homeowner who had a really bad roof. He had a tarp up on the top of his roof, just trying to keep water out of his home. And he was called to go to housing court. And I mean, housing court is court. It doesn't look any different than any other courtroom you'd go into and deal with a judge and everything. Yet people are being called in there having no idea how to represent themselves or navigate the system. And if anything, they've only received threatening letters written in lawyer speak that they don't understand. So they go into this courtroom and this homeowner asked us to come with him. And so Jordan, Jesse's husband, our project coordinator, accompanied this homeowner to the courtroom, and the judge pretty much just straight up was like, how do you plead? And this man is he's a very soft-spoken gentleman in his 70s, and he was trembling with fear. He had never been in a courtroom. He had never been in trouble in any format with the law or anything. And he looked at Jordan and he said, what do I say? And Jordan just responded with what we knew. We said, I guess guilty. And the man looked at the judge and said, guilty. And he just started weeping there in the courtroom, just feeling so negatively convicted for something that he would have loved to already have fixed and repaired himself, but didn't have the means. And that's really the story that moved our hearts to wanting to figure something else out. And so we started specifically in one Northeast neighborhood where we just started approaching code violations with a restorative model. And so we actually started doing circles and figuring out what the needs were. And out of that came multiple solutions. One was we realized many people could handle violations on their own, but they needed access to resources such as tools. So we opened up our tool collection as a form of tool library that people can borrow tools from and empower themselves. And we saw a huge increase in how many of those violations were taken away just by someone borrowing a ladder, a paintbrush, a drill, and we might give them a little bit of advice on how to handle it themselves. Boom, that took out a huge percentage of the violations right there. So all we needed to do was adopt more of a shared economy. And there we go. We're sharing resources, getting problems solved. The next thing would be people, even if they solve their own problem, we're still having to go through court and pay court fees, which could be as much up to $120 per visit. So now you have a ticket violation of maybe $400 for peeling paint. You pay a court fee of $120. You can go through that whole process, spending over $500, and none of your problem has been solved. So within that, we also approach the situation, see what the needs are. And if it's something that's a bit more extensive that they don't have the means to take care of themselves with our tool library, that's where they can tend to get into our home repair program, where we either work with our own volunteers or some small contractors we have that we help solve those problems on a grander scale. To answer the question of if someone's listening and wants to know how to approach this, they can go to our website, JerusalemFarm.org, where they can apply to get into our home repair program. And once upon doing that, we go out, make an assessment, and see if it's something we're able to do, and if they're in our work area, which is very limited as well. The more we're out there, the more need we see. So it is also a good note that we have a long list of places that need help, which also means we can always use help taking care of those problems.
And so the guy with the tarp on his roof, okay, what, I guess you helped him get a new roof or something?
Yeah, absolutely. And so part of what we do isn't always us doing the work. We also are very connected to other city resources. So the city actually has a roof program that they are able to do so many roofs every year. We have friends and we're creating relationships, Jesse, with other organizations and home roofing companies that are now starting to give some labor towards us, which is great, helping that come around. But yes, Spencer, we helped him get a new roof. And then it's always good. You can't fix the other problems until there's a roof. So you need a solid roof over your head.
No fooling.
Yes. So,
or you shouldn't. Yeah. I mean, you can, but you shouldn't, because they won't stay fixed. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep.
Yep. So, we have many a ways that we go about helping people navigate things. Often a big one is peeling paint. And many people don't know that our city has a free paint program for painting your home. And so sometimes it's as simple as pointing someone in the right direction of a community resource that already exists.
So you help them, get connected to the city is going to give you going to write you a ticket and take your money, but they're not going to tell you that they have a free program that that would help you fix it. Right.
There's a lot of holes in the system, Spencer.
Yeah, no fooling. I understand that. So tell us about sustainable living.
Okay, so we as Catholics like to follow the principles of Catholic social teaching, and one of those being care for creation. And in care for creation, we find our purpose of caring for the earth, and the ways that we can do that comes around also as caring for those around us. And so some sustainable living things that we do, one big one is compost. So Jerusalem Farm had the first curbside compost program here in Kansas City. It just serves the Pendleton Heights neighborhood, but when people put out their trash and recycling, they can also put out a 5-gallon bucket of their compost, and we'll bike around the neighborhood and pick those up and compost them in our compost piles. And then we have other people who live outside the neighborhood that we do what we call commuter composting. So you can come and bring your compost to our farm, and we'll take that and turn it into good soil that can be used to grow vegetables and fruits. So compost is a big one. And then also just with our retreatants, we teach a lot about how we can live in ways that that care for creation. So the biggest one for me is slowing down consumerism. We are a consumerism culture, and if we can slow that down, the first thing in reduce, reuse, recycle is reduce. So slowing down that consumerism, and then reuse, showing people that they can reuse things. Our tool library is a great example of how we can share resources and not have to have our own drill, our own snowblower, our own lawnmower, all of those things. We can share those in a neighborhood, and that cuts down on consumerism a lot. And then, of course, recycle being the last of those. How can we take things and make them into something useful again? So there's a lot of teaching in that, a lot of teaching people about where our energy comes from. Our farm is 100% solar powered, but also just knowing where the rest of Kansas City's energy comes from. And the one coal-fired power plant is in the Indian Mound neighborhood in the Northeast.
Tell us about your service retreat experiences.
Sunny's muted.
So Jerusalem Farm hosts service retreat experiences for high school and college students. And that's where high school and college students from all around the country and locally come and they stay in our intentional community for a week at a time, where they are incorporated into our four cornerstones and way of life, which is community, simplicity, service, and prayer.
If some member of our audience, a student or a parent or grandparent, wants to learn more about your retreat experiences, what do they do?
They can go to our website. It's jerusalemfarm.org.
Okay. And you navigate around there and you'll find out who to contact, I guess.
Yep.
Jesse, what got you into this?
Well, I grew up in a family that always said time is worth more than money. And so we did a lot of volunteering as a family. And then when I got older, I joined an AmeriCorps program called the National Civilian Community Corps, a team-based traveling program. And in that program, I met a fine young gentleman named Jordan Sheely, and who later became my husband. And we hitchhiked around the country together and volunteered at different places because we really enjoyed the service aspect of what we were doing in AmeriCorps. But we found that there was little backbone to it when you didn't have it anchored in something like love for one another and love for the works that Christ came and taught us what to do. So we traveled around the country for a while and worked with different organizations, and we ended up at Nazareth Farm in West Virginia, which is the very same model that we have here at Jerusalem Farm, except that it's very, very rural. And we lived there for 3 years. And then the campus minister at Avila University, Dave Armstrong, he came with a group from Avila to West Virginia and said, "Hey, what do you guys think about starting a farm in Kansas City?" And we said, "I don't know, I've never been there." And then he brought us out to Kansas City and showed us an old convent, which is where we now have Jerusalem Farm, and brought us out.
Showed you a what? Oconda?
An old convent.
Old convent. Okay, yep. Thank you.
That's now where the farm is. We call it our farmhouse. So.
Oh, great. Great. Yep. How do you pay your bills?
Good question. So Jerusalem Farm is a nonprofit. When the students come and stay with us, they pay a participation fee for their time, and that covers a percentage. We accept donations from individuals and also from foundations, and we seek grants as well. And then, wonderful. Like I said before, the homeowners pay us back for the work that they do. So we sort of have four major income sources. Yeah.
Wonderful.
And Jessie's talking herself down. She works very hard at fundraising and does a really great job with grants and donors and is a great executive director. That's it.
And Sunny, what do you find so attractive about Jerusalem Farm?
What I find attractive about Jerusalem Farm is people living out their lives with a purpose for something greater than just themselves. It's incredible to be surrounded by people every day that when we wake up, it's about how are we showing up for each other and how are we living out these things that we don't just talk about, but we're really believing and putting it into action. It's very easy to complain and see the problems and want someone else, a local government or a bigger government or another group, to take care of it. But let's pick up some tools. Let's live together to make life easier in some way so that we can show up to lighten the load for others.
What part of the scriptures best summarize your motivations for your work at Jerusalem Farm?
I think a lot of the Acts of the Apostles and the idea of the early church communities and how they cared for each other, and it was so based on community and how when we work together and these big problems that we're facing are very approachable when we're working together. So
tell me more about the Acts of the Apostles.
I want to make sure that you get covered in this talk for Jerusalem Farm in general. Is Jesse should really talk about our land trust program.
So I think the next major thing that we have noticed is the great need for affordable housing in Kansas City, but especially speaking about the Northeast neighborhoods. So the neighborhood that we live in, which is Pendleton Heights, we have seen amazing growth in that neighborhood in just the past 5 years. So in 2017, the average home price in our neighborhood was around $40,000, and today it's $141,000. So it has changed dramatically, and we want to make sure that the people who have been calling the Northeast home for many years are able to stay in their neighborhood. So we as an organization have been working on the largest survey to date in the Northeast, and we've been taking people's input and learning about their situations. And one thing that has come up is that people don't believe that if they lost the home that they were in today, renter or homeowner, that they could afford another place in our neighborhood. Over 50% of people said that they would not be able to stay in our neighborhood. And so we want to do something that impacts that uneasiness that people feel. And so one thing that we have talked about is creating a land trust. And we would not be Kansas City's first. The Marlboro Land Trust that we'll be partnering with is Kansas City's first land trust. And a land trust just means that there's a home that someone can buy and live in, and that they have a deed restriction that when they are done with that home, whether they're moving to a larger home or downsizing, whatever happened, moving somewhere else, that home has a deed restriction that we sold to another family in need.
I think what's really exciting about the land trust program, which we're seeking to get rolling, is as Jesse kind of mentioned, helping people stay where they want to be. Yeah. And not being pushed out by the rising prices of housing and people flipping houses. And yes, we are coming in and we are improving homes. We are making them better. We are making them safer. We're making them more aesthetic, all those things. But we are not trying to push people out from where they are, which is why with the housing land trust, it will be locked in an algorithm to keep it affordable and accessible. For example, literally trying to keep people exactly where they want to be. I'm working on a house right down the street from the farm.
It's interesting you mentioned the Acts of the Apostles. I've heard a lot of people, not necessarily Christian, talk about the Sermon on the Mount. Is that any part of what has influenced your thinking? Or
yeah, certainly. I mean, the Sermon on the Mount has so much hope. I think that is what makes the Sermon on the Mount the most appealing, is it's just telling people, like, if you are sad, if you feel weak, if you are like all of these different, you know, feelings that you're feeling, like, have hope, because, you know, there is something greater for you. There is something, if you can be merciful, if you are pure of heart, all of those sorts of things. I think it gives that hope. And as well, it does focus on the poor and vulnerable as, you know, as the focus of Jesus's ministry.
Talking about the universal appeal of the Sermon on the Mount, Gandhi said he was greatly inspired by the Sermon on the Mount. Comment?
I would just say, in terms of Gandhi and nonviolence and whatnot, while we have our four cornerstones that Jerusalem Farm lives by, we definitely seek to be a community that's principled in nonviolence. And that really shows up through our practices of nonviolent communication. We kind of do a somewhat annual training on that for new people that have joined us. And we just try to use it in the ways that we work through our own personal relationships, as well as we just sit in a lot of communication circles here at the farm. just where we're communicating about work or life or faith, whatever it might be. And so just really seeking to make space to listen and be heard is definitely an important part, as well as we do culturally identify with principles of nonviolence within our personal practices, whether that be just through living out our life in ways, trying to show up as love for our neighbors. And also when we come to look at global issues as well.
What other facilities like Jerusalem Farm exist serving other parts of the greater metro area, like Sherrith Brooks, maybe?
Yeah, certainly. Sherrith Brook is a wonderful example of another community that that serves in the Northeast as well. Sherrith Brook on 12th and Benton, they have a shower house for people experiencing homelessness and also have breakfasts. I also think of A Simple House. They have a friendship ministry for people on the margins.
I would add another group that I follow on Instagram is KC Food Not Bombs. So they are also rooted in their principles of alternatives to industrial military complex and rerouting resources. And so they serve food on Independence Avenue on Sundays in the early evening. And yeah, they work really hard to just kind of come together as a small group of people and just being part of the change that they want to see showing up for their neighbors in a loving way. So KC Food Not Bombs, they're always looking for some help making some food and handing it out.
We're basically about out of time. Any final words for our audience?
At Jerusalem Farm, we just really want to recognize that it takes everyone to show up for everyone. When we lift each other up, we all rise together. And that's what we believe in at Jerusalem Farm. And we would love for anybody who wants to be a part of that to contact us.
Jesse?
Yeah, like Sunny said, thank you so much for having us on. It's a joy to talk about why we do the things that we do and what we're doing here in the Northeast. And I think Sunny definitely hit it on the head with the idea of we're just trying to be good neighbors. And I hope people that are interested in the same movement would come and check us out. We have a community night the second Tuesday of every month where anyone can come and join us for a meal, enjoy some fellowship, see the farm, and eat delicious food, of course.
Wonderful. We've been talking with Jesse Sheely and Jordan Hamrick about their lives and work with Jerusalem Farm. I'm Spencer Graves. More information on that is available not only at their website, but also at the description of this episode of Radioactive Magazine on kkfi.org. Go to kkfi.org, then News and Public Affairs, then Radioactive Magazine. Thanks for listening.